Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to One Up, delivered through the AI podcast channel. I'm your host as ever, Guy Drinkle, and joining me as usual as ever is Carl. How are you doing, buddy?
Not too bad, Guy. How about yourself?
Yeah, I'm all good. It's a bit of a milder day over in the northeast up here. So happy guy. Not on this above 20 nonsense today. but yeah, well, you're not British, but you can't almost British. How's the weather going over in Ireland?
I think it's just under 20 degrees now, which is fairly warm for our standards. Naturally, we're a little colder than you have it over there. So I was there for a walk kind of before we went on with the show. And I have to say, I drank my water bottle within the first like 20 minutes of an hour long walk. So that'll tell you how not used to this I am. But we may as well enjoy it while it's there, though, I suppose, because I've seen it's inevitably going to rain next week. So
back to the norm, the lovely July weather.
That's it.
But we're not here to talk about the weather, unless people want that, but just give us a message if you want a weather podcast. But we are here to do a podcast. I'm not sure if we promised that on the pod, but we found this idea and thought of it like a good 6-7 months ago. That was the plan, and then we kind of didn't. But we're going to go through each other's history of gaming. I think we're going to do mine first, but we'll kind of explain it a bit closer before we go through it. But Carl, as ever, we do start with the news, and not too much news. Obviously, we're kind of in the gap off post E3 where there's not much happening now, but what's in the news then?
Yeah, so as you say, we are kind of in that lull between the post E3 and the pre TGS kind of build up of news. But there's a few things that stand out as always. Number one on the lineup, Alan Wake developer Remedy regains publishing rights, and this comes from Tom Phillips over at Eurogamer. And Tom writes, Remedy Entertainment has regained the publishing rights to Alan Wake from Microsoft. Now busy crafting the very promising looking Control, Remedy told investors it would earn approximately 2.5 million euro of royalties for, quote, previously released games, end quote, this year. After ownership of the spooky novel writing adventure shooter, quote, reverted, end quote, back to the studio. It's fair to say the relationship between Remedy and Microsoft was left strained by the pair's last project together, the live-action TV/game hybrid Quantum Break. Remedy has since made a point of saying its future now lies making games for all platforms, and Control was announced last year during PlayStation's E3 2018 press conference. What this means for the future, whether new Alan Wake games might follow, or perhaps a port for other consoles, remains to be seen. For the moment, Remedy is building Control and has said it wants its new franchise to be just one part of a wider universe it would like to delve into. Following Control's release in late August, of new stories and missions due after. Quote, let's be honest, we're not one of the massive studios around the world, but we're still independent, end quote. Control director Michael Miksu Kasarinen, sorry for butchering your name, Michael, told me when I visited Remedy earlier this year. Quote, this is our own IP. We decide what's going to happen with it. The smartest thing for us to is to do what we believe in. Be ready to be a bit weird, be controversial even. Let's try to make a statement, then play it safe. That's part of the exhale after Quantum Break. Control is very much an expression of that, end quote. And there's since been an update on that. Speaking to Eurogamer, Alan Wake developer Remedy has teased the possibility of a multi-platform release for its previously Microsoft-owned Hero. Quote, the only thing we want to clarify now that Remedy owns the publishing rights is that we could bring Alan Wake to different platforms if we so choose, end quote, a Remedy spokesperson told Eurogamer this afternoon. Quote, we have nothing to announce for now. We are fully focused on Control releasing on the 27th of August, end quote. Don't expect to hear anything more on Alan Wake until after then, but it sounds as if a PlayStation release is on the cards, and you can read Tom's full article over on Eurogamer. So yeah, it just seems strange that in the wake, sorry for the play on words there, of Microsoft acquiring numerous new IP and studios, that one of the IP they owned, they're after releasing true to the original developer. Now, you know, maybe that's because they didn't think it would fit in well with their fans of allowing a different developer maybe to develop a sequel to the Alan Wake games, and they didn't think it was an IP worth keeping around. But nonetheless, it just seems strange to me to let an IP go.
Yeah, it is. It's almost strange, but Alan Wake, it's got its cult following, if that's the right word for it, I suppose, but it's not exactly a game-changing IP. And, like, I've never once attempted to play it, so it's not really my cup of tea. So, personally, for me, it doesn't really make much difference if it turns into a third-person thing for Microsoft. But you did make a good point there in terms of Microsoft have obviously been hoarding first-party studios and stuff like that, but maybe they just think, rather than continue or try and persuade Remedy to stick with them or whatever, or as you mentioned, hand Alan Wake over to someone else, maybe they just think it's not really worth it. I'm not sure how well it did financially or anything like that, but I can't imagine Alan Wake being some big juggernaut of a franchise that's that much of a difference. So I think this really does make sense, and they're talking about making that Control game. I couldn't remember it before. I just had a quick Google of it, and I do remember that from Sony's thing last year. Again, it just doesn't really look like my cup of tea. I know they made Quantum Break as well. Again, that I didn't play that. I might check that on Game Pass one day, but it's it's just a bit of a weird situation, but maybe the relationship broke down that much. Microsoft just couldn't be bothered dealing with them and just work. Well, you can have your IP, I'm not asked.
Yeah, it could well be that. I mean, the as you said, I think you described it well, that Alan Wake is kind of a cult classic. I did pick it up, but I never got around to playing it, like many things. But I think there was certainly potential there for the series kind of to grow and expand. But at the same time, with survival horror games, there's only so far they can expand, because it is a niche IP a niche genre. In that, you know, even the best-selling Silent Hill or Resident Evil games, there's still like a drop in the pond in comparison to how much like a first-person popular first-person shooter title or a popular IP or RPG might sell. You know, it is there's limits to the genre. You know, I'm not I'm not putting any slight on Resident Evil or Silent Hill. I mean, they have games that have sold 10 million copies. That the recent Resident Evils has been doing quite well, but at the same time, as it just doesn't compare to some other games in other genres. So, I suppose Microsoft probably looked at it that way and thought, you know, look, if we want to make a silent or a survival horror game, we can go to a new IP. I mean, obviously they seem to be backing the Blair Witch game that's coming out next month, which for the moment I believe is an Xbox Xbox and PC exclusive. So you know they have their hands in other pots, and I suppose, as you said, Alan Wake just isn't that big a deal to them. And as I kind of touched on myself as well, I'd assume it's a thought that if they were to allow another studio to take a shot at Alan Wake, it probably wouldn't go down too well in the eyes of critics and that. I mean, it's one thing taking one of Rare's IPs and letting a studio take a crack at it, like with Battletoads. But that's Rare in the Microsoft stable, and it could be looked at, oh, well, they have Rare's approval. Whereas with this, you know, no one's going to believe for a second that they would have Remedy's approval for that. So I suppose it makes sense to do this. And it'll be interesting to see, obviously, what they do with Alan Wake. Like, could we, a lot of talk of a PlayStation port here, but I mean, let's not forget the Alan Wake games were last gen, so I don't think you could rule out it coming to Switch potentially as more and more games seem to be making their way to that platform.
Yeah, the stuff about the PlayStation port, I mean, has anyone on PlayStation really been that buffered? I mean, nobody's dying to play. God, I was about to say John Wickler, Alan Wake. I don't think anyone's really been that bothered, that they've been desperate to play it. And as you say, it's last gen, and well, really, I mean, no, would you really want to play a limited version of a? Well, when was the end of last gen? 10 years ago? No. About 8 years ago. It's an 8-year-old game or even longer. It just seems a bit pointless to me. But the Switch is interesting because they can obviously take older games, and the Switch just puts a unique experience on any game, doesn't it? Really, whether it's handheld or on the TV. Whereas PlayStation, I think it'd almost be pointless, especially considering, well, PlayStation haven't announced it, but we imagine PS5 and Xbox 2 next year, so I think that's bigger news for future gens rather than bringing back old games, because, well, old games, that was Xbox stick 3-4 years ago with backwards compatibility, and yeah, it doesn't really mean much nowadays, I don't think, until next gen, where there's a limited catalogue, and then you can obviously load up old games, but nowadays I don't think an 8-year-old or plus game, it's just, it doesn't really warrant news, I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose really we're not even sure if despite the comments from Remedy, it doesn't seem there's anything solid in the plans here anyway. It seems they're very much focused on control, and, you know, that's probably the best way to be. I mean, by all accounts, Control is a very promising game. There's been some very positive previews for it, so I'm personally looking forward to giving it a try at some point. But obviously it's nice for Remedy as an independent developer just to have their IP, their creation back in their catalogue, so that when it comes to deciding what the next project will be, you know, Alan Wake 2 or I think it'll be 2, because the second game was kind of a side title almost. That kind of thing. It's nice that they have that option for them, because I'm sure they probably still had ideas for that IP, where they wanted to bring it before they obviously fell out with Microsoft. So It's just nice for them to have that back there and to have that option. And obviously Microsoft are happy enough moving ahead with what they have in terms of new IP and studios and the like.
Yeah, yeah. We obviously know there's a shed load of stuff planned as well. Maybe Remedy's one just fell through the cracks ultimately. So next news thing, it's not as big as that, I suppose, but Cuphead DLC, which is obviously a game, again, it's got like a cult following, and known as one of the hardest games ever, which is surprising, but it kind of an almost important, or the right stance, I suppose, from Cuphead makers.
Yeah, so Cuphead developers delay DLC, cite desire to make games in a healthier way. And this comes from Nathan Grayson over on Kotaku. And Nathan writes, fans of tough-as-nails animated shoot-em-up Cuphead have been waiting since 2018 for Delicious Last Course, a DLC expansion with a whiff of finality about it. Unfortunately, they're going to have to wait a little longer because it's been delayed to 2020. The developers offered a commitment to quality and a focus on sustainable development practices as reasons. Delicious Last Course will add a new aisle, quote, full of delectable adventures for Cuphead and Mugman to gnaw on, end quote, as well as a new character, Miss Chalice. Originally, the DLC was set to come out sometime this year, but today those plans got turned on their cup-shaped head. Quote, while we initially announced a 2019 release date for the Delicious Last Course expansion, our highest priority is making sure this new adventure meets the meticulous level of care and quality we strive for, end quote, said the game's co-director, Chad Moldenhauer, in a statement about the delay. Quote, we want to be absolutely certain that this next adventure feels at home in the world of Cuphead and is full of moments that surprise and delight players, end quote. Moldenhauer also alluded to new improved game development practices as a reason for the delay. Quote, furthermore, the development of the original game taught us a great deal about the importance of making things in a way that's healthy and sustainable for our team, end quote. If all goes according to plan, this will result in a better game and happier developers. The price, admittedly, is a longer wait, but Moldenhauer and company hope it will be worth everybody's while. Quote, this wasn't an easy decision to make, but we're confident it's one that will result in a higher quality experience that's all the sweeter when it does arrive, end quote, he said. And you can read the full story over on Kotaku. So, you know, we've seen a lot of this lately where companies kind of seem to be delaying things and publicly making statements that, you know, even if they don't directly use the term crunch, that seem to be kind of anti-crunch and, you know, trying to protect their employees and, you know, kind of just when a game is ready, it's ready. And I think it's important that more companies take a stand here when we've seen kind of the bad light that was shed on Rockstar, for example, when it came to Red Dead Redemption 2's development. I mean, we don't want to, as much as we love these games, we don't want to think of the creators of these games as suffering when it comes to their development.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah, I think that's the most important thing there is we discussed this on a much bigger title, as you mentioned, with Rockstar and RDR2, and they got quite a bit of backlash. I think it was some quotes from whistleblower, might be the wrong term there, but just an insider said it was manic and over the top. And I think it's obviously the problem stemmed from trying to rush and pressure yourself, but I think you just got to stop labeling release dates right too early on in development. Like, because I think they said this was meant to come out in 2018, then 2019. For something to get delayed, whether it ends up being 2 years or 2 years or whatever, something to get delayed 2 years, it must have been too early to even think about a release date. So I think people just got to. This sounds like I'm blaming the companies, which is completely wrong, but yeah, I think people just got to be less concrete with release dates and maybe just say it's coming. Don't put a year or whatever on it. I think it's a very good stance that you don't want people risking their health, being overworked. I mean, I imagine it's not the biggest developer as well, so I'm not sure how many staff will be there, but a game like this, I don't think it needs to be rushed, really, because I've not played Cuphead. I know it's really difficult, but I imagine it's something that you could probably pick up any time and then get into new content. So I think it's the right stance, and hopefully we see more people do this sort of thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you consider the build-up to the actual original game, Cuphead, I mean, we seen it a few years ago, and it was massive. I mean, it blew up. People loved the art style and kind of the idea of the difficulty and that kind of thing. And it felt like we were waiting years for the game, and it would be kind of like that was the attitude they seemed to take, you know, in their own words, basically, was when it's ready, it's ready. They didn't want to put a time stamp on it. And as I said, that is the best approach to take. And I think more companies could benefit from kind of taking a similar approach and just rather than trying. I understand a lot more goes into it than simply thinking of when it's ready, because, you know, that there's
marketing
stakeholders and that kind of thing that are putting pressure on games to get out within the fiscal year, and like there's a lot of consideration into release dates more than just when it's ready, and it's a shame it has to be that way. But and as you said, this is a smaller developer that they probably have the benefit of being able to they have less people that they're accountable to. Well, in comparison to a project from one of the bigger third-party publishers, or indeed first-party, so I suppose you can't make the same argument for everyone is the best way of putting it. But nonetheless, it is a positive, and I'm sure based on the first game, when it eventually does come out next year, that a little delicious last course will be another critical hit for the developers, and for that reason I'm sure they can be confident that they'll deliver the product people want, even if it takes a bit more time.
Yeah, and I think that's the main thing. The product needs to be good, and will be good, I imagine. That's the thing. As long as it turns out to be good, I think you can forgive any delay, as long as it's not like Lionhead back in the day, where it doesn't exist. But last piece of news, a bit more positive. Well, we presume positive because the game's not actually out yet. But CD Projekt Red are already prepping a Cyberpunk follow-up.
Yeah, so this comes from Tom Phillips over at Eurogamer. That's another one for Tom Phillips this week. And in what was a short news week, he somehow still managed to pop up twice. And Tom writes, Cyberpunk 2077 maker CD Projekt Red has caused fan hearts to flutter with talk of its work on three games in the Cyberpunk universe. Speaking to Polish financial site Bankier, CDPR exec Adam Kaczynski mentioned the developers' various teams were now spread across the three games, as well as continuing support for Gwent. But a lot of this, most of it, in fact, simply reinforces what we already knew. One of those three Cyberpunk games is Cyberpunk 2077, now less than a year away from its 16th of April 2020 launch. Another is the next big AAA game from the studio, which you knew back in March 2018 would be released by the end of 2021. This seems quite soon after the release of Cyberpunk 2077. Perhaps it will slip. What's new here is confirmation this will be another game in the Cyberpunk universe rather than, as the internet might have you believe, The Witcher 4. Quote, our next big product will also be in the Cyberpunk universe, end quote, CDPR exec Peter Neulebowicz explained. Quote, and we're already working on it and treating it as a really big and innovative project for us, end quote. No word yet then on a return for Keanu. Finally, CDPR is working on Cyberpunk 2077's multiplayer. We knew that too. It's unclear if this will release standalone or simply be a separate mode playable via 2077, a la GTA Online. The multiplayer team is made up of around 40 people. For reference, CDPR employs around 800 total. Some kind of multiplayer component for Cyberpunk 2077 has been talked of, played up, and played down for donkey's years. Back in 2013, CDPR boss Adam Podowski told Eurogamer there would be, quote, multiplayer features, end quote, in the game. 5 years later, at E3 2018, CDPR guest designer Patrick Mills told us multiplayer was still being worked on. Quote, we have multiplayer in R&D, but the game we're shipping to you, the game you're going to buy, is the single-player experience, end quote, Mills said. Quote, at launch, we're concentrating on the single-player game. That's what we want to give you, end quote. Last month at E3 2019, I checked in with lead guest designer Paul Sasko, who told me plans had not changed and Cyberpunk 2077 will definitely be single player at launch. Quote, yes, 100%, end quote, Sasko said. Quote, we're not really working on multiplayer. Our sole focus is single player. We'll do that, then we'll see. We're not saying no, but we're not saying yes. If something does happen, it will definitely be post-launch, and that's as much as I can say right now, end quote. When contacted for further illumination on all of the above, CDPR declined to comment further. In short, then, Cyberpunk 2077 next April, probably a multiplayer thing after, then another big game a couple years down the line. And you can read the full story over on Eurogamer. Now, there's since been somewhat of an update to that story on other sites, which I didn't catch till after I'd already pulled this story, where basically CD Projekt Red are somewhat playing down that these are standalone titles and seem to indicate that these projects are more likely to be DLC for Cyberpunk 2077. However, as we know, as two of the minority that probably finished everything The Witcher 3 has to offer, that, you know, when they do an expansion, they do an expansion. And, you know, Blood and Wine, in particular, could have been a standalone title. It's like a 40-50 hour game. So I'm sure this Cyberpunk 2077 expansion will be much the same. So it's still exciting to know that they're kind of want to do more in this world and that they'll continue with it. And we do know that CD Projekt Red also have another RPG that's not Cyberpunk in the works. So we could still get a new Witcher title somewhere in the future. But nonetheless, whatever they're working on, my attitude is anything more from CD Projekt is something to be excited about. What's your take on?
I'm going to play it. Whatever the hell it is, I'm going to play all of it. That's the main takeaway for me. Yeah, Cyberpunk, we know it's going to be good. We just do. Even if it's like a bit disappointing, it's still going to be good. It's still going to be one of the best games of the year. It just is. And the fact that CD Projekt Red are working on other stuff, and it's not really a surprise, but it's always nice to hear. And if it's a big ass DLC, lovely. I mean, I'll probably end up replaying the whole game like I did with Witcher, if I don't get an ending or something I don't like. But yeah, I'll download it. I'll pay it. The interesting thing is, obviously, this comes out in April 2020. And then if the DLC comes out like 2 years later or whatever, or a year later or whatever, we'll be on next gen. So that means we have to rebuy it. Or do we have to, or would we have to keep our PlayStation 4s and Xboxes kicking about?
Well, I don't know. There's been a lot of kind of talk on that. And obviously a lot of people expect that with the new gen, these kind of games. And I think it would have to, really, when you look at the games that are slated for spring next year with Cyberpunk, Watch Avengers, yeah. Watch Dogs, and Final Fantasy VII as well, and The Last of Us 2, allegedly. You know, we're talking some of the biggest titles of the gen coming right at the end of it. So I think that they're going to straddle the generations, and I don't think people will be happy if that's in the form of let's re-release them 6 months later for £60 again.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people have said it's more likely to be like almost like an Xbox One X thing, that like you put it in your Xbox One X, you get a patch.
Yeah.
That kind of soups it up to be Xbox One X compatible and get the benefits of that. So I think we're more likely to see something like this. And I hope we are. Like, I don't want to be shelling out £60 for, and when I say £60, I of course mean euro. People are like, who pays £60 for their games? For things like Cyberpunk and Final Fantasy and indeed The Last of Us, which will be games I will get at launch, and then to think if I want to play them at a better res and that kind of thing 6 months down the line, I'd have to buy them again. Like, that's, I don't think that's realistic. So I'm sure they'll come up with some kind of solution here, and I'm sure there won't be any kind of mess when it comes to downloading your DLC for Cyberpunk, even if you did buy the game on last gen, technically.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll figure it out. And even if it's 2 years later anyway, I imagine it'll probably go down in price as well. And obviously Project Red has a good relationship with Xbox, seemingly. I think Witcher 3 was done on Xbox's stage. Maybe Game Pass for not 2077, but maybe Witcher and stuff goes into Game Pass quite late on in this gen. It's kind of like a hello, come play us eventually. But yeah, in terms of the other news, whatever they're working on, obviously there's been a decent amount about 2077. We obviously got the big ass gameplay demo. We got Keanu. We've got loads of cinematic stuff. Do you think that'd translate quite well? I know it's a tough question because we haven't touched it, but would you think it'd translate quite well into multiplayer if that's one of the things I've speculated on?
That's a good point. I'd wonder what kind of form the multiplayer would take. Like, are we talking, you know, kind of a competitive FPS mode, or are we talking more of a kind of games as a service, kind of co-op Destiny type experience almost? I think the latter probably makes more sense in this climate, and that it could be possibly what we're seeing, and that's something I would definitely welcome. You know, I think kind of that's a market can only have so many games and series in it. Like, it's not, I don't think it's open to kind of the saturation that some other genres can be. But I think one team or kind of series to enter the frame for that I would welcome would be CD Projekt, because they are a top-notch developer, and you know they're also a smart when it comes to business decisions. So I don't think they'd lightly make a decision like that to enter that space. But I'm glad that the focus for now is the single player. I don't like when teams spread themselves too thin, trying to tick all the boxes, and we can see what happens there when it doesn't go to plan. But obviously Anthem, you know, when they tried to make this brilliant mashup of multiplayer and the Bungie single player experience, and we kind of lost on both fronts there, and you know we didn't get the Bungie experience that we're used to, and that would be a real shame if, you know, with The Witcher, what an awesome game, still my game of the generation, thinking it's yours as well, from what I know. to lose that, you know, if they kind of spread themselves too thin on Cyberpunk and tried to give half their focus to multiplayer would be a real shame. So I'm glad that's not the case.
Yeah, I like the Games of a Service shout. The author of the article obviously put a GTA Online ? Considering the world it's in, that can't possibly make sense as a big-ass playground for people to murder each other in. Just hopefully it doesn't ultimately end up as a battle royale, which is the way it'll probably be. But yeah, maybe we get some Space Gwent or Future Gwent. Gotta love a card game. Gotta love a card game. Maybe it's just Gwent. It stayed in the universe. But yeah, that's the end of the news. So Carl, this was kind of your idea, so why don't you explain it, and then we'll kind of get into my gaming history.
Yeah, so obviously our long term listeners will remember early on when we revived the show, we went through our top 10 games, which was a bit of an insight into kind of our gaming history and what kind of shaped our tastes in games and that kind of thing. But, you know, from Guy and I's point of view, that was a major headache. You know, don't put yourself under pressure to name your top 10 games, because you realize you've played hundreds, maybe even thousands of games over the years, and you love a lot of them, and kind of narrowing it down to just 10 is painful. But I thought we'd kind of take a looser look at each other's kind of history and kind of how we came to love video games and the kind of video games we like and that kind of thing, and kind of where we lay in the various console wars over the years. And I just thought it'd be kind of a fun little insight to take. So I thought we'd start with yours today, Guy, and then hopefully we'll say tentatively next week, but knowing us, it'll probably be 2 or 3 weeks.
In the future, we'll do Carl's.
Especially with the lack of news at the moment, you can't really blame us. There's not as much to discuss. But when there's sufficient news to cover as well, we'll get it done. But this week, we'll start with Guy's, you know, start at the very start, his first experience with a video game, and kind of build on through the years there up until the modern times.
Right, so I'll get us started with my first console, which was a Sega Mega Drive. Just for reference, I was born in 1994, so I'm 25 now. So I don't know how. I obviously very very young, so I don't know how I got a Mega Drive, but there was one there. Only game I can remember playing, Echo the Dolphin, and it was a twat. I remember it being a twat. I can't remember much else, but yeah, Echo the Dolphin. I don't know what I've always had a love for Sonic, so there must be something in there where I've played Sonic, but I can't remember playing it at my house. My mate, who lived on the same road as me, he also had one. I think we played Tails and Sonic there as well. I think played crappy football games as well. I can't remember the name of them. But yeah, Sega Mega Drive was my first console experience. I won't say it's my first console, because I doubt my parents would have given me that at such a young age. But yeah, Echo the Dolphin and Sega Mega Drive was my first one. I think it's long-term established my relationship with Nintendo is really non-existent before the Switch. So yeah, I was Team Sega when I was a kid.
You've just lost us like half our listeners there, guy, and by siding with the losing side in the view of many.
It's a bloody it's a recurring theme.
Yeah. And so obviously that was kind of early on when you were quite young and barely cognizant of kind of video games. I'm assuming based on what you've said, like, do you have any older siblings? Is that possibly like an older brother's console or?
Yeah, my older brother, he's 2 years older than me, so he's 27. I can't ever remember him playing the Sega, but I think my dad used to play a bit more when I was younger. But my brother, to kind of lead on to the next console, me and him shared, or the family kind of shared, a PlayStation 1. So my brother had that, and yeah, the PlayStation 1 was probably the first console I can remember a bit better, rather than just one game. So yeah, I think we had a family PlayStation 1, and that's where playing stuff like Crash Bandicoot, to where the love of that stemmed from. WWE games were quite big then, or WWF as it was back then. I'm trying to rack my brain for PlayStation 1 games.
What year are we talking here when you can kind of first recall the PlayStation 1?
Must be the really late 90s. Cause say if I was playing Sega about 98, maybe PlayStation was 99, 2000-ish. I'm not sure when the PlayStation 2 came out.
The PlayStation 2 came in 2001, so you would have been right at the end of the PlayStation 1's life cycle. And
Final favorite Fantasy game for 7. The... Final Fantasy 7, PlayStation 1. Just dawned on me. That was a PlayStation 1 game, I believe. And I love that game.
You're actually playing that at the moment, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Same graphics, or a little bit better graphics. But it's just, it was at such a young age, you get a game that has 3 discs, 4 discs, and it's just kind of like astonished, just kind of scared how big a game could be. And I've put this in our WhatsApp group a couple of times, and a couple of my other mates who are big Final Fantasy fans, I'm like, I thought I was near the end of the game, and then it popped up, you finished disc one content, and I was like, what? Oh, it's just, I can't remember anything about that as a kid. I remember, if people haven't played Final Fantasy VII, this might be a bit of a blur, but I remember finishing the Midgar stuff. I knew, I can't remember a bloody name. I remember Thingy died. I'm going to go with Thingy. But if anyone wants to play Final Fantasy VII, Thingy dies. I knew she died, but I can't remember how she died when I played it as a kid. I've just beat that on the Xbox now. So yeah, Final Fantasy was probably my first memory of PlayStation, as well as Crash Bandicoot. But Crash Bandicoot kind of all consoles, really. And then PlayStation 2 was kind of, again, it was a shared thing. And PlayStation 2, again, it's a strange one, PlayStation 2, because I just really remember playing WWF games. I'm sure you're in a similar boat with me. Here Comes the Pain, Shut Your Mouth. I think we had SmackDown, if I remember correctly.
So it was Just Bring It was the first one on the PS2. Then you had... Here Comes Spin was the fifth. So what was the fourth? It'll rack my brain here. I have to Google this one. But so which one do you recall kind of coming in on?
I think it's where, obviously, you can't remember names. It's the one where you could run around backstage and then you just go around talking to people. And then all of a sudden, The Undertaker wants to fight you for some reason. I think it was Just Bring It. I remember Here Comes the Pain more, but I think it was Just Bring It.
Shut Your Mouth was the fourth one.
Right.
Yeah, and then obviously Know Your Role and the original SmackDown then were on PS1.
It's, like I still watch it now and stuff like that, but it's just, it's obviously not as good. But yeah, that was my main takeaway from the PlayStation 2, because I did share it with my brother, and I think the PlayStation 2 was more his, and I got, must be one of the only people, I got the original Xbox. So yeah, my love of Xbox and being in second place, or probably even worse than second place with the original Xbox.
Was that like your first personal console?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's obviously something special. Mm. And I mean, were you cognizant of that the Xbox was incoming? Was this something that you'd kind of seen on TV and was looking forward to it? Or, you know, what was the story there, the build up to it? And when did you actually get it? Was it birthday, Christmas?
I think it was, I'm pretty sure it was Christmas, because I remember talking to my dad about this, and he was like, it was a lot of money for a young kid. But I think he said he was being a bellend in Amsterdam, and my mum was angry at him. So he's like, I can't really not get him the present now that I've done something stupid. So I ended up getting an Xbox. I think it was for Christmas. I'm not sure why I wanted an Xbox. I think it's just because, well, my brother's a bit of a dickhead, so I think I wanted something different. It's just, yeah, if anyone's listened to AI Scouted and stuff like that, I know it kind of crossed over him. He's the one who broke the oven. So yeah, it's, I think I just wanted to be different from my brother, and I remember, now looking back, we know Microsoft's marketing campaigns, especially back in 360 and original days, they were a lot different. They were a lot more, I think they were trying to appeal to a younger audience and kind of be a bit more out there. I'm not sure how to put this, but yeah, I think Microsoft really just try to be different. And I must have kind of responded to that quite well. So yeah, I got the Xbox. I got the big ass Duke controller, which is a stuff of myths. I'm pretty sure there's one still in my house somewhere, because I imagine it's a weapon I can use to fight off robbers and stuff as a mate. So that was brilliant.
I think you've taken the words out of my mind. Your first the game you got with it.
Ooh, must have been Halo. Yes, it was Halo.
Halo Combat Evolved.
Yeah, Combat Evolved. Because I remember putting it on. I remember putting it on at Christmas time, and my grandparents at the time asked what it's about. And like, it's about killing space aliens and stuff. And like, oh, okay. And I was like, yeah. To that wall now. I must have been like 10-ish, probably a bit younger, smidge younger. No, probably not 10-ish, actually, that's about right. It's like, is that right to be playing that? Like, yeah, space aliens, I'm killing stuff. It's just, oh, yeah, just. I mean, we've talked about on E3 and stuff how Halo is it's not what it used to be. The last two have not been what it's used to, and that we're kind of excited about the new one as well. I think you're kind of in a similar boat with me with a long-standing relationship with Halo, and I think this is where it stemmed from. My first console, my first real, my own real game. And that's why it's special to me. I think the people who have grew up with Xbox, I think that's why Halo's a special thing. Halo 4 and 5 can be as shit as the one. I'll buy the new one. It could have the worst reviews ever. I'll buy it. I mean, I bought Anthem, for fuck's sake. So Halo's got a real special place. I'm not sure if Gears of War was out on launch, but I loved Gears of War 1. Similar story with Halo, but Gears of War 1 and add 2 onto this as well, they're two of the most special games, especially at that time. They're two of the most special games ever for me. Like, Gears of War 1 is just, for what it was at the age, what it was at the time, that must be one of the best exclusives in that time period for me. It's such a good game.
So obviously we're moving on to the 360 there. So I think you're very much establishing your place here as an Xbox kid, which is interesting. I suppose that's a, you know, obviously you're 4 years younger than I am. So you're in that, just at the right age slot where you could have properly come into it at that point where it was Xbox versus GameCube versus PlayStation. And you got to make that choice. Whereas for me, I suppose the first choice I would have had was PS1 or N64, really. Or Sega Saturn. But I thought they were a myth until I grew older and finally seeing one in the store, because, you know, no one I knew had a Sega Saturn. But so you very much just placed your flag in the Microsoft camp, and obviously natural progression from the Xbox to the 360. And I mean, when did you get your 360, and what kind of game did you get at launch with the 360?
I think, if I remember correctly, the 360 came out at a weird time. I think it came out in like spring or something like that. And
it was December 2005 us in Europe, which is a strange time. Usually kind of it's October, November, so people get a chance to get them, but that's right up on top of Christmas. Mm-hmm. Parents weren't picking that up for Christmas. Yeah. They'd have long had their Christmas presents picked up.
So I think I got mine in 2007, if that came out in 2006, because I remember one of my mates coming into school, his birthday, it was kind of the same as mine, it was like April. Mine's 19th, so it was around there. He got one on there, because I remember, for some reason, he brought his headset into school. I don't know why. He's making shitty little jokes. And I think I got mine in the Christmas of that year. And the first few games I got with that, I got Oblivion on launch. And anyone who listened to that podcast you talked about in like the intro bit where we talked about our favourite games, Oblivion was my number one, and still is. Nothing's changing that. I hated Oblivion at the start, because I was like, it's not a game built for a middling teenager, because all at that time I was pissing about with games and stuff like that. And I eventually went back on it. I couldn't even get out the fucking sewers, man. The starting bit.
And then a lot of people fall at that hurdle.
Yeah, just me and other 10-year-old kids who can't be asked playing it. And then I eventually found out you could change the difficulty. Oh my God, I'm so glad I went back to that game, because Oblivion is so fucking special to me, man. I love that game so much. And yeah, I just can't believe, looking back, I didn't like it at the start. And then obviously I must have finished it a good three or four times by now. It's probably due a replay on that, actually. So yeah, Oblivion's the first one I can remember. There was other stuff I got as well. You go.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if we're talking based on the time frame you've given me there, we're talking Christmas 2007. I know Halo 3 would have been out. I think Halo 3 came out that fall, so... Was Halo 3 another one of the titles that you picked up quite early on?
I'll tell you a story about this. My dad pre-ordered Halo 3, but he got the collector's edition thing. So he pre-ordered that, and it obviously came when Halo 3 came out. And he said to me the day, I obviously before school, he said, "That's for Christmas, don't open it." That didn't happen. So I was sat there. He came in from work, and I was like, "Yeah, this happened by accident." I already like three mates around playing Halo. Like, yes, it's class. Yeah, it's great. It's just what a game. And then strangely, instead of punishing me, I think my dad ended up getting me the BioShock Collector's Edition instead. And I think on that pod again, I discussed my love for BioShock 1 and Infinite. I didn't play it too. That was a nice shock as well. So yeah, it's a strange one, but with Xbox 360 came Xbox Live as well, and again, this is kind of a quite funny story. my first real experience of Xbox Live, because it was a bit of a bugger on the setup at the start, because internet back then was a bit crappy. You had to get, if your wireless wasn't very good, I think on the original 360s, you needed like a wireless dongle thing in the back, and we didn't have that. So instead of that, I got a big ass Ethernet cable that went through the whole house. But the first experience I had on Xbox Live was Rainbow Six Vegas. It must have been 2 by then. So I was playing, me and my mate were playing, probably a day or two. And then we get into a lobby. This is before party chat and stuff like that. So it was in game chat. And then there's a kid mouthing off to me with his mates, and he's got one of these names. Like one of those game battles names, like silent bullets and stuff like that, with like all X's and Z's all over the place. And I think it was them two v me. I don't know how it ended up in a lobby like that, but I was obviously young and a bit of a twat mouthing off to people, and they were doing vice versa. I was killing one of them, but one of them was really good. And it turned out to be my mate from school who was in the lobby with me. And he ended up being one of the like better kids in one of the better clans in Europe for Rainbow, because he played it all the time.
I might have actually played against him at some point in that case, because I was quite competitive on Rainbow Six.
Yeah, because I remember going into school and like, oh, this twat, I can't remember what it was, I'll call it Bullets. Now, this twat Bullets was mouthing off to me, and then my other mate at school went, "That's Jordan." I was like, "Nah." And I went over it and said, "Is that your gamer tag?" "Yeah, that's me." Mine was Mr. Bean at the time, and it still is after an iteration of loads of shitty names. "Oh, yeah, mine's Mr. Bean." I was like, "Oh, you are a twat." I was like, "Yeah, you are as well." So that was quite funny. So yeah, Rainbow was probably my first Xbox Live experience. But in terms of the Xbox Live game, I think this just changed the whole online gaming thing as a whole. Was COD 4 or Modern Warfare 1, which is obviously getting rebooted this year. But yeah, COD 4 was the game that... It's weird saying, it probably took me from a casual gamer into what I am now. And it's weird saying that about COD, because now you think of COD as the ultimate casual gamer, but COD 4 was just, it's almost an addiction, isn't it? When I was that age and younger, COD just kind of grabs you in a way that it didn't. But it's all in this time, I was probably playing World of Warcraft as well, which I'm not a bigger lover of PC gaming now, but World of Warcraft, whenever I was playing that, is that an MMORPG, I think it's still king now, but back then it probably wasn't my cup of tea. But I went around one of my mates' house, he played it, I was like, yeah, this is for me. That's a real game that I probably wouldn't even consider for my best games list, but World of Warcraft is just, it's just something very different, isn't it, really? It's just different to everything. And I also had a Game Boy Advance. I was one of them. I didn't have a Game Boy. I had a Game Boy Advance, which is still next to me in the drawer, literally to my right. And I've still got Pokemon Red, Silver, and loads of other stuff there. But yeah, Pokemon on my Game Boy Advance as well. That was probably a lot earlier than this, but yeah, COD 4 was probably the biggest and best game of the Xbox 360, especially online days. But yeah,
that's a revelation for me. I didn't know you were a World of Warcraft head. I mean, how many years did you play World of Warcraft for?
Oh, it must have been two. It must have been 2 or 3, but I never got anywhere near the max level. I think I always just ended up restarting. That's not why.
My next question was going to be, what was your race and class? But I'm assuming then you had multiple races and classes.
I had a main. My main was a Tauren hunter called Puds. I don't,
What a name.
P-U-double-D.
Striking fear into all his enemies.
Yeah. P-U-double-D-Z. And I had a, I had one of them little shitty red raptors that were outside the Orc City Orgrim, I think it was called. Called Mini-Me, all one word.
So a bit, Pods and Mini-Me.
Yes, obviously. That's how it worked. So that was my main. And I think that's kind of the one that was like my overall revert back to. I think I got around to about level 55, 60. I think this was when like the level cap was 70 or 80. I don't know what it is nowadays. But yeah, that was my main one. Thing is, I used to be one of them weirdos who bought like gold, so I was probably just one who spent most of my time at the auction house pissing about. And I tried running people through guilds and or instances, I should say, and stuff like that. So I just tried helping people really rather than pissing off on my own and doing stuff. So I think that was why I got held back. I was too lovely to people, and my clan was called. Or my guild, I should say, was called Death Before Breakfast, and I spelt breakfast wrong, which is annoying me. It still annoys me to this day.
I can't get around spelling mistakes. I'm sorry. I wouldn't have been a member had I played exactly. World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
I think I played World of Warcraft for all of 20 minutes. I made like a dwarf and I was running around and I was kind of like, I can't get into this. And I just jumped right off. But I can appreciate MMOs and kind of what mm-hmm. they did. I did dabble with kind of RuneScape and
RuneScape, what a game.
Guild Wars 2 and a few different things like that over the years.
RuneScape was the first one like that might have been secondary school for you, but like primary school and start of secondary school for me, it was like MSN, RuneScape. Together. That was the way forward for me there. You chat to your mates and then you just go around calling everyone a twat on RuneScape.
RuneScape was I never played beyond the free mode.
Oh, no,
my friends were both paid players for
my mate was a member in his first year of uni because he didn't take his Xbox over, so he played RuneScape for some reason. It was very strange. But yeah, before we get on to Xbox One, Xbox 360 is my favorite console. It's better. Like the one shit compared to the 360. I think most people would agree with that. So, I've talked about my love of Mass Effect games quite a lot on these pods. Went to HMV in Middlesbrough, which is like a 10-15 minute car drive or 20-minute train. For me, we had the day out in HMV. I can't remember what film we went to go see, but get in the HMV, go straight to the Xbox section, on sale. Mass Effect 1, Mass Effect 2, got them for about £2 each, £2.50 each. I didn't sleep that weekend. Didn't sleep.
I don't blame you. Yeah. That's quite a deal as well. Yeah, £4 for those two games.
And it was just, I think it was the year before 3 came out. I can't remember what year it was, but it was, like, I just, Jesus. My mate did the same. And he didn't play 1. Like, I think he started it, but 1, if anyone else has played it, it's quite dated. And the loading screens were kind of like when you're in an elevator or a lift, whatever side of the continent, side of the planet you're on. But when you're in a lift, it takes like a good minute. It was quite strange. But yeah, it was... that was a hell of a weekend, because Mass Effect 1, albeit it's really aged badly now, that started it. But Mass Effect 2 is almost, I think it is genuinely perfection in storytelling and character development for me. Like, Mass Effect 3 was effectively a better game than 2, but the story obviously finished so shitly. But yeah, Mass Effect 2 is just perfection in storytelling for me in that era. And this is kind of the end of the 360 gen, I believe. I think RDR1 came out when I was revising for GCSEs in year 11. I took PE And if anyone who's seen what I'd actually look like, probably a bit of a surprise, because I'm chubby. That's put it politely. But I did PE, because the way it was split up, you had to do like PE or art or other crap like that. So why wouldn't you do it? So yeah, I did that. And you had to revise for the actual exam, not like just the running about and all that jazz. Yeah. That didn't happen when I saw RDR was on my mat when I went home. So I ended up skipping like revision sessions for my PE exam to play Red Dead. Worth it. Got a D. Got a D in PE. Was worth it.
I can't judge you. I once left an English exam early because I knew that Halo 2 had arrived at my friend's house. So I can relate.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think the real last goodbye to the 360 is probably GTA or GTA Online, if you want to split it like that. Because I think GTA Online was kind of the last big thing. And then I think it took like a year for GTA 5 to go back to the current gen, but next gen at that time. So it took like a year for GTA to come back, and then a little longer for online to go on Xbox One and PlayStation 4. So yeah, I think GTA was probably the finishing touch of that of that gen.
What a way to go out!
Absolutely. And
of course, then that runs us into the current gen with the, and of course, if it's not already established, you're very much in the Microsoft camp. So an Xbox One was obviously the obvious inclusion. Mind you've kind of spread your rings a little bit in this gen, as I'll touch on. But was the Xbox One a day one buy for you? Did you get it on the launch of the console?
I did, yeah. Because I think I was playing COD Ghosts around my mate's, I think it was the first year of uni when Xbox One came out for me. That might be wrong, but I was playing COD Ghosts around my mate's on, I think he had it on his 360. And I got it, again, this is kind of similar to Halo, I got it on the first day. I got Xbox One launch, I can't remember what it was called, I think it was just launch day thing. And the only game I had for it was COD Ghosts, but it wasn't on a disc. You got like a digital piece of plastic and you put the code in and stuff like that. So for like a month and a half, or maybe 2 months, okay, whenever Xbox One came out, I only could play COD Ghosts. yeah, I was playing COD Ghosts. I have a soft spot for COD Ghosts actually because of that. But on that first Christmas, I remember getting Rise, Son of Rome. I think it was Rise, Son of Rome. And that's the full title. Rise, which is, it's a very pretty game. But looking back now, it's probably a bit disappointing because I imagine it had quite a bit of hype and stuff like that. But it was a really beautiful game, but it was only like 8 to 12 hours long, if that. And it was really fun, but I imagine it failed to deliver on the promises, which is quite a bit of the story for Xbox One, I suppose.
Yeah, no, I get, obviously I only, as we talked about recent shows, I recently played True Rise, so I can see where you're coming from. It is something to look at, and you can enjoy the combat, but in terms of that real gripping kind of title, and especially at a launch title, you expect something special to kind of really sell the console. It didn't really tick that box, unfortunately. And I mean, what have Crytek done since Rise, actually? It's, I have no idea.
Was there a crisis? I don't think there has been a crisis, have there? I don't think there has.
No, I don't think so.
Picked up by THQ Nordic, and then it went under or something. I can't remember.
No, they're still about. What have they done since Rise? They have done an iOS game. They have done yes, that's it. They're kind of done VR stuff. They've done The Climb. Okay. They've done Robinson, The Journey. And they are now working on Hunt Showdown, which I don't know too much about.
I know that, yeah. It's kind of like set in a... I don't know if it's the future or the past, but it's kind of like in a dystopian past where it's like bounty hunters against each other. So I think you hunt a monster, and then you grab like its head or whatever the hell you need to collect a bounty. And then you and your team have got to take it back from where you hunt a monster into town, I think. I might be getting this confused with a different game, but you've got to take it into a town, and then other people have got to try and kill you to steal the bounty. It looks quite a good concept, actually.
Yeah, it looks like it's actually coming out next month, so...
I think it was pre-game preview on Xbox. So if it's out of that, it must have been doing okay.
Yeah, it's coming to Xbox One and Microsoft Windows first. It's coming to PS4 later in the year. So that's one to watch. I wasn't even aware of that, actually. Must check it out. Certainly. So there, Crytek are still around. Let's be glad Rise Son of Rome did not kill Crytek. They've just diversified into VR and such. It's a shame that it didn't really, when you consider how ambitious that the Crysis, especially the first Crysis game, was that that Rise didn't quite tick that box. But then moving on, kind of post kind of the launch window, as kind of more games started to release, kind of what stands out to you in kind of the first couple of years of the Xbox One?
I've got two main ones before the big one. Assassin's Creed Black Flag. This was a launch title, but I think I ended up getting like in springtime because one of my mates got it, and I was like, is it any good? Yeah, it's clear. Okay, I'll get it. Assassin's Creed Black Flag. I know that was on 360 and PS3 as well. But that for me is still the best Assassin's Creed game. The two new ones, I know they're trying to go off in a different direction, but Black Flag is just... I think I probably like it more because it kind of moved away from the whole assassin stuff, like in a big way. So I love Black Flag and just the pirate stuff, and that's why I'm looking forward to Skull and Bones so much. Ubisoft bastards. Is it my favourite of this gen? Oh, screw it, I'm going to say it's my favourite. Second favourite. Or third favourite. Your third favourite. I forgot The Witcher was on this channel. But third favourite is a Xbox exclusive that I can't remember having a lot of fanfare or a lot of big expectations, considering that it was a first-person shooter game, and I think it was coming out at the same time as COD, obviously, and Battlefield and all that jazz, was Titanfall. That game was amazing. I think that was like the last first-person shooter game that I almost loved. Like I talked about my love for COD 4, love COD 5, love COD 6, but since then there's not really much that's jumped out at me, and Titanfall was probably that the thing that just clicked with me so much to kind of go, yeah, this is what first-person shooter should be about. It's simply just fun. Adding in the big ass mech suits with Titans, it's just, yeah, this is perfect. I love Titanfall 2, but Titanfall 1 was the one that clicked the magic back in. So yeah, Titanfall 1 was a special, special game. But after that, because at this time I was in uni, my uni mates obviously pretty much played it every night. I played Xbox every night. So Titanfall was probably the first step of kind of becoming like lifelong mates with them. But after that, Destiny 1. Like, Destiny 1 came out with huge expectations, and it probably disappointed on that expectations. But what it delivered for me at the perfect time in my life, where uni, it wasn't like exam season or I did journalism, so like project season, whatever the hell I'd call it there. It just allowed so many people to enjoy it, because like doing the weekly raid, having free characters as what I was then, so many things to do. You could do the raid three times a week, and it wouldn't get repetitive. And I had one mate in my class from uni. Then he introduced me to his housemate. And then he introduced someone that he, because he lives in Sheffield, he introduced me from someone he lives in Sheffield with, then someone he worked with at a local game, and then he kind of gave this big group where we just used to raid every week. It was such a perfect time. I think that was the perfect game to have, let you have that many people just enjoy it. And even though Destiny 1, I mean, Vault of Glass was proper basic bitch, but it was just so fun. And then the Dark Below was the second one, and that was really good. The first two expansions were just perfect for me, really, in that. And I know you've played a bit of Destiny as well. Did we'll obviously get into your game history on the next show, but Destiny 1 have a similar relationship with you, I suppose, is the right word.
Yeah, Destiny 1 was my first PS4 game. I got my PS4 was the Destiny bundle, the Snow White PlayStation 4, which Destiny. I picked it up on launch day, but I, you know, similar to yourself, I studied media and therefore was more about projects than assignments, but happened I had a lot of assignments due the time Destiny came out. So I barely got to play week one, and my friends all got like a good few levels ahead of me. But I definitely caught up once I handed in all my assignments, and similar to yourself, between kind of people I knew already and then people we'd kind of pick up on Destiny websites or through mutual friends and that kind of thing. We got kind of an extended raiding group together so that we always had people available to raid and get the three raids in a week. And it was massive up until kind of the Dark Below, kind of a few weeks after that, kind of it seemed to have run its course, and we kind of jumped off before the later expansions. But nonetheless, like, it was a massive game, so I can definitely relate on that one.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I think it was 2015, might be wrong on the year, but I think it was like April or May. I had some money saved up, so I got three games in 1 week. Three games, 1 week, all on disc, so it must have been like 40 to 50 quid. Got Elder Scrolls Online, Arkham Knight, Witcher 3. Have you ever heard me talk about the other two?
No.
Exactly. Last one I played was The Witcher 3. The main one I wanted was Arkham Knight, because I've talked about my love of Arkham City. I think that's the best one myself. Arkham Knight, albeit good, it was better than the proper Warner Brothers one that I can't remember. Origins. Yeah, the Origins, I think. It was better than that, but was still a bit not as good. Elder Scrolls Online, I really enjoy, and it's probably the only MMO I've played in a long while, because I think it translated quite well to it, to console. So I played that for a little bit, and then all of a sudden I put The Witcher in, and I was like, oh shit, life's fucked. Yeah, so I don't know how many hours I've got in that. I mean, I'll try and quickly look up on my phone whilst I'm speaking how much I've played The Witcher 3. But The Witcher 3, it's just the best game on this gen. We mentioned it earlier. It just is. And it's God of War, brilliant. RDR2, brilliant. But nothing's topping The Witcher 3 at all, really. It's just a perfect game. I mean, well, I'd say perfect, but it's got some of its issues. I mean, some of the combat's a bit basic, but bit bitch. But in terms of creating the world, I know RDR's kind of got the best interactive world now, but just at that time, there was nothing anywhere near The Witcher 3, and it's just such a good game. And I think this year, I finally finished the big boy DLC. I did the Heart of Stone at the end of last year, and I did Blood and Wine this year, so I've finally done it justice, and I've played 259 hours on The Witcher 3. there you go. That's,
jeez.
Yeah, that's third on my friends list. so yeah, I've played quite a lot of that game, considering it's not really too much you can do differently on a second playthrough. But I don't do bell end playthroughs where you're just a dick to everyone. but yeah, it's such a good game. It's just the game of this gen.
Yeah, no, it really was. It's a massive game, and I mean, obviously, it's gonna have some competition now. When CD Projekt Red obviously are going to be rivaling themselves with Cyberpunk, and of course, The Last of Us 2 is set to be massive. So, it may not end the generation as the best game, but it's certainly there for me, much like yourself at the moment. And and I mean, obviously that kind of brings us up to kind of recent games and kind of the games we've spent the past year or so discussing. So I think it's interesting. Like I did the kind of contrast there with kind of just, it's only 4 years between us, but obviously that led to you kind of coming in at a later stage with the Xbox kind of being your first major platform, which it's an interesting take to have on someone's kind of view of gaming past, so to speak. So glad we finally got around to getting that bit of history on Guy Drinkle's gaming.
Absolutely. And just to add, I do have a PlayStation 4. I have played God of War, as we've done a small review of that, but we did a full review of Spider-Man, didn't we? So I do have access to a PlayStation 4, which only happened because my dad had a PlayStation because he worked over in Cumbria, and I live in the Northeast. So he had the PlayStation 4 to kind of be like a smart TV hub. My Xbox, I had the day one Xbox, as I said, but I ended up getting an Xbox One S. So I ended up just trading my original Xbox with my dad's PlayStation 4 because I wanted to play Horizon Zero Dawn because, like, robot dinosaurs. So I ended up doing that. Did all that, didn't really get on that. I enjoyed Horizon, didn't finish it. I might have to go back to that one day. But yeah, it allowed me to get access to Spider-Man, which it is one of the best games of this gen, but I don't think it is, but it's one of the most fun games. 100, it must be up there in the fun games. And God of War, it must be in the top three best games of this gen, undisputedly. And then it depends on your biases, whether it's Witcher 3, RDR2, or The Witcher, I'd probably say, or God of War in the top three games of this gen. So yeah, and then just to finish, got a Switch, Pokemon, bit of a lull, Civilization and Crash Bandicoot. But yeah, I think the Switch is kind of, it's there. I know I have access to it, but I'm kind of waiting for the game that's going to ignite it again. And I think that'll obviously be Pokemon.
I was going to say more Pokemon.
Yeah, that would just be Pokemon.
Yeah, I have a lot of friends that are kind of waiting on Switches to pick up that. I mean, I haven't played my Switch in a while. And it's something I regret because, like, there's games I want to play on it, but it's just, it's one of those things. There's just so many games and so little time. Nice segue there into kind of the modern day. What have you been playing lately, Guy?
Oh, this is almost as detailed as my other list. Well, you alluded to, actually. I got Final Fantasy VII and Final Fantasy IX on the sale during the E3. So that was the start of... No, it was like the middle of last month, wasn't it? So yeah, it doesn't feel that long ago, E3. But yeah, I got them two on sale. So I've been playing through Final Fantasy VII. I think I'm on like disc two. on that, as I said. So I'll eventually get to Final Fantasy IX, which is one of my, it's probably my favourite Final Fantasy I played. I know I didn't mention it, but that was kind of lost in the PlayStation 2 era. So yeah, I got looking forward to that. I got the dream game car, Crash Bandicoot Team Racing, Crash Team Racing. It's brilliant. It's a bit of a bastard, but it's brilliant. It does what it needs to do. But I've heard it's hard.
I've heard it's very hard in comparison to the original game. I know it has like a difficulty option, so you can drop it down, and as people said, then it makes it a bit more accessible, like Mario Kart. But I have heard it's a very tough game. I haven't picked it up yet. Yeah. Kind of waiting for more people to commit to it. But
The thing is, if you're playing a game, do you start on easy or do you start on medium?
Usually medium. Yeah. Depends. If it's a game or series I'm particularly good at or something, I'd probably go straight for the most difficult setting, but yeah, usually normal.
Yeah, so I started Crash Team Racing on medium, and it was hard as a bastard. And you have to start again to change the difficulty, I think, unless I'm just being stupid. I might actually be stupid on that. But I was like, okay, I've done like 3 races, I'm not starting again. Should have, but yeah. So I eventually found a character that I could win with, and then it kind of transformed the game. So I think if anyone does pick it up or is struggling with it, just try all the characters and you'll find one eventually. I recommend Tiny, the not so tiny. I don't know what he is. I think he's a dingo or something. But yeah, he's a big lad. But yeah, in the same week, or it might have been a week after, I got F1 2019. I enjoy F1 as I'm sure people in the one up group suffer with on occasional weekends when it's me, Neil, and Nathan talking about it. But yeah, it, the game's better than the real life sport because, well, yeah, not hard. And that's something I used to enjoy quite a lot with my mates on multiplayer, because you could do a season properly together, and they've not really brought that back, which is a bit disappointing. But yeah, it's a very well made game and stuff like that. And yeah, finally my mates back to annoying me back to playing FIFA 19, and that game is shit. That game is really shit. So I just can't wait. I can't wait for FIFA 20 to hopefully not be shit, and then hopefully FIFA Street is what. Well, I hope it's going to be. But yeah, FIFA 19 is a bad game.
There's yet another hot take.
Yes. I don't think it's that hot, actually. But what have you been playing?
I haven't been playing as wide a range as you. Lately, I've been focused on Final Fantasy IX and completing it. I completed it yesterday, which was actually the first time I'd ever finished it, because when I was younger, as was my curse with many RPG I tried to complete, that I'd either save over my own save or lose my memory card. And that happened to me with Final Fantasy IX when I was on disc 4 in my youth. So I finally finished it yesterday. I'm now trying to dust off the platinum and hands on the table. I've kind of cheated to get the platinum. People who are familiar with the game will know that there's certain trophies linked to things that can be quite a headache. There's the skipping mini game where you have to skip 1,000 times and it gets progressively harder. There's also the racing mini game where, again, it gets progressively harder. So I used remote play and auto scripts to nail both of those. And then that left me with, there was two left, which was 10,000 kills and the Excalibur 2, which basically involves speed running the game up until basically the end of the game. If you reach this point in less than 12 hours, you can get this like sword that's like the best sword in the game for a certain character. So with the 10,000 kills, again, I can't be bothered just killing. Like, I think in a natural playthrough, you probably get about 2,000 to 3,000 kills, depending on how much of a grinder you are. So you're far off 10,000. So again, auto script, got the remote play, got a rubber band, had it running all last night while I was asleep. rubber band around the controller, auto script, tapping the A, just go to an area where the enemies are easy and just let it blast. But I'm still not done. It's still on. It was on for about 10 hours and still not on. So, I mean, I felt I had to turn off my PlayStation for a few hours this morning. That thing was running hot. So, we'll probably get back to that overnight tonight. So, but I think I'm already know what I'm gonna play next. I'm looking at. I know it was free this month's PlayStation Plus titles. Detroit Become Human. Mm. I do own it on disc somewhere. I picked it up in an Amazon sale at one point, but I don't know where my disc is. So, I'll just download it for free and play that next. So that's definitely my next game, and I gather that won't be. I'll probably get that finished within a week because it's kind of a 10 to 12 hour maybe game. So I think that's a nice little palate cleanser after playing like 100 hours of Final Fantasy IX. But yeah, so Final Fantasy IX has been me for the past few weeks.
Yeah, and I think that's one of my next ones on the list. So maybe we could do a Final Fantasy IX review probably in about 2 years when I finished it. I do like the look of Detroit Become Human, but obviously I have to dust off my PlayStation. One day. I'll find a spot for both of them one day. But this has been my gaming history in our next pod. I wasn't going to say next week. On our next pod, we will do your gaming history and hopefully we get some more news as well. But we've still finished up doing an hour and a half, Carl, because an hour pod is just for chumps, isn't it?
That's just standard. Yeah, exactly. We have to give people a bit of extra, you know.
Exactly. At least it's only one part. But yeah, thank you, Carl, and thank you everyone listening at home. If you do want to follow us on Twitter, it's at @oneup_AI. And if you're listening on the actual AI app and you're wondering where we are on any other podcast services, if you want to like catalog them in one area, we're on AI channel, I think we are officially. But any recommendations for a show or anything, just tweet either me or Carl on our private ones, or do tag OneUp AI. Make the promise every show, but I will use it eventually. I will use it more eventually. But yeah, do tweet us if you want any recommendations on a show. So yeah, thank you everyone. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.